people don't realize is that kids, at no matter what age, they all want the same thing. They want to be loved. They want to know that they are loved unconditionally. By the way, you got to realize that loving someone and loving someone unconditionally, Dr. Sarah, is two different things. Mm-hmm. It's two different things. And children in foster care truly deserve to have that feeling of unconditional love.
Are you raising a family while also feeling like you're still growing up yourself? Do you wonder if you are getting it right? Welcome to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. She's a pediatrician and a mom, and she helps the whole family.
Hi, I'm Dr. Sarah Adams, a board-certified pediatrician, but I'm not your pediatrician. Feel free to use my podcast as helpful information, but in no way do I intend my podcast to replace the advice of your physician. Your physician knows you and is in the best position to provide medical advice.
There are hundreds of thousands of children in the foster care system in America. On Growing Up with Dr. Sarah, we often talk about the environments children grow up in and how those early experiences shape their sense of safety, belonging, and self-worth. Today's guest embodies that conversation in one of the most powerful ways I've ever encountered. Like so many young people aging out of care, today's guest was handed a black trash bag when he turned 18 to carry everything he owned. That moment became the foundation for a national movement. Rob Scheer is the founder of Comfort Cases, a nonprofit dedicated to restoring dignity to children in the foster care system. Rob, I am so grateful to have you here.
Well, Dr. Sarah, thank you so much for having me.
You are also a CNN hero, an author of the acclaimed memoir, A Forever Family, the host of an award-winning podcast, Fostering Change, and a proud father of five children, each of whom entered your family through the same system you survived.
Yeah.
You look at foster care through the lens of childhood development, parenting, and resilience. What does it truly mean to you to show up for children who need us the most?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say thank you for giving me this platform, because I say it all the time. Children in foster care, they don't belong to you and your listeners. They don't belong to me. They actually belong to us. They belong to us. You know, Nelson Mandela said it so clearly. We in society are judged by the way we treat our children, by the way we treat our children. And the way we treat kids in foster care, it's absolutely a disgrace. And to this day, and by the way, I came in the system in the 70s, aged out in the 80s, and my children started arriving 17 years ago, and nothing, my friend, nothing has changed in the foster care system.
And that is a hard thing to really imagine, because you would think that we would learn. And I want to circle back to what you said, is that they belong to us. Such a powerful statement, because they are our future.
They are. And you know what? This is a thing, Dr. Sarah, that really blows my mind. And I say this all over the country, now all over the world. We're an international organization, is that children come into foster care because of choices other people made.
Okay? Right.
Came into the system because of other people made those choices. We can do better when it comes to the choices we make for our children, because the statistics of our kids in foster care, Dr. Sarah, it's very dark. You know, we're looking at only 54% of the close to 400,000 kids actually graduate high school. That's it. Could you imagine if that happened in your school district?
Mm-mm. Yeah. No, that's so true. And, you know, when you think about this was 18, you were 18, as you mentioned, when you were given that black trash bag and basically to carry the belongings, because you did age out of the foster care system. What did that moment communicate to you as a young person about your worth? And how has that memory really stayed with you over time?
Wow. You know, the thing is This trash bag that I don't allow to go far away from me because I don't want to forget where I came from, and I never want my children to be embarrassed of where they came from. But you know, when that bag was handed to me, it actually did its job. It made me feel disposable. It made me feel invisible. It made me feel as though I didn't matter. See, the thing is that kids in foster care, and by the way, we have close to 20,000 children in the United States this year that will age out of the system. All states are different. They age out at 18, 21, 24, but there will be approximately 20,000 children. And understand, only 25% of those kids actually have a high school diploma. The sad part, close to 70% of those kids become homeless within 48 hours like me. And that very first night, Dr. Sarah, was the scariest night of my life. Let me tell you the reason why. I was not that kid. I was the youngest of 10. My brothers and sisters had fallen to the wayside. Teenage pregnancy, drug addiction, incarceration. You stick the F word in front of our names, you put us on a pathway of failure. We fill the penitentiaries. 80% of our death row inmates were in foster care. So for me, I was that kid who said, yes, sir, and no, sir, and yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I went to church every Sunday. I respected my elders. And to be handed that trash bag was a moment of just alone. I wanted my biological parents to be there. Even though they burned me and they beat me and they held food for me, at least they were there, Dr. Sarah. I cried for my foster parents. I couldn't believe they gave up on me because of a check. Because of a check. And then I realized, community, they've only given kids in foster care three choices. That is all we're given. Choice number one, we give up. Give up. Suicide rate in foster care is higher than we have ever seen. Choice number two, we give in. We do exactly what you expect of us. We commit the petty crimes. We grow your gangs. And by the way, the gangs that we grow them because we want to be wanted. We want people to look at us and say that they need us. And the thing that people don't understand is that all of those things, the community, you guys built us. You made us. You created us. And then we have choice number three. And it's the choice that I chose as a senior in high school. And that's to give it all I got.
That's powerful. That's powerful. And then fast forward to comfort cases, which I want to really talk about, because to date, comfort cases have distributed more than 280,000 bags. You know, when you talk about trash bags, it makes me think of waste and something we throw away. So I really appreciate you sharing about your experience and how you chose option three to really go forward and do what you needed to do. But that those options make it so difficult. And those comfort bags feel more than just a symbolic gesture. Tell me, how many children have found themselves in foster care, and what can it take to prevent them from choosing option one, option two?
I mean, first of all, we have to, and the only way we correct anything is we have to admit our wrongs. Admitting the wrongs does not mean we pound somebody down. Admitting the wrongs is to realize that there's an issue and then you move forward. And so, you know, for us, it comes to our child welfare system. People all over the country say how broken it is, but that's not true. It is not broken. When things are broken, Dr. Sarah, you take super glue, you can put it back together. When things are shattered, they must be rebuilt. And the foster care system is actually shattered. Okay. Actually is shattered. So, you know, the thing when it comes to comfort cases, I'm a banker by trade. I come from the .com world. I'm a taker. And for me to be in the .org world where we're givers has been a total life-changing for me. 13 years ago, when my husband and I decided that we wanted to teach our children that their legacy is about what they give and not what they take, and to understand that empathy is not in our DNA, that empathy is taught. That is how Comfort Cases came to birth. And it was to grab a backpack and to make sure that no child was handed a trash bag, to make sure that social workers were given the items that they needed. And by the way, your viewers and listeners, the majority of them continuously keep saying, the government takes care of these kids. No, they do not. I have met children that have sat in group homes. They have been in a group home for 30 days and they're sharing a toothbrush with their sibling. So wow. We need to have a rude awakening that the system is not working. But with this backpack, we let the kids know. And I tell the kids all the time, they ask me, Mr. Rob, why? I say, why what? And they said, why did somebody do this? Why did somebody give me a brand new pair of pajamas? Why did they give me my own lotion, shampoo, conditioner, bar of soap, my own book, my own stuffy, my own blankie, my own toothbrush? Why? And I say to the kids, as I say to you, and I say to all of your viewers, you do not have to know someone to love someone. Mm-hmm. You don't have to know someone to love someone. And when our elders say, invest in a child, you invest in their future, that is not true. It is not true. When you invest in a child, you actually invest in my future. You invest in your future because they are our leaders of tomorrow.
And that is so powerful. I want to thank you for sharing that. I heard you talk about the blanket as wrapping somebody, you know, in love. And when you say you don't have to know someone to love someone, I think about those kids pulling out that blanket from that comfort bag and wrapping themselves in it and feeling that love. Yeah. I want to go back to the reminder that while most children don't necessarily choose, number one, to be in foster care, you know, these are choices.
I've never met any child.
These are choices made for
them.
I have
yet to meet, I've heard there are kids out there, but I'm telling you, I have last year I spent 210 nights in hotels as a public speaker. I have never met a child in 13 years, 300,000 cases that has ever wanted to be in foster care. And by the way, even for me, as a 59-year-old grown adult now, there are days in my life, and even though I've had therapy, and I still have therapy, by the way, thank you, Dr. Rich, I know you're listening. The thing that I always say is that, you know, even to this day, as an adult who's had all the work I needed to do, you still have that feeling as a young boy, as a young child, as a young girl, you're not wanted. That I hope kids see when we give them this case is that they are, you know, they are wanted and they are loved. And, you know, I look at our five children. And by the way, our first four kids, they arrived, they were 2 and 4. And then 3 months later, my 6-month-old and my 2-year-old arrived. So 4 kids within 3 months, all 4 with trash bags. And then in 2019, when my life completely changed, when I decided to give up my career and be a public speaker, I met my 5th child. And people don't realize is that kids, at no matter what age, they all want the same thing. They want to be loved. They want to know that they are loved unconditionally. By the way, you got to realize that loving someone and loving someone unconditionally, Dr. Sarah, is 2 different things. And children in foster care truly deserve to have that feeling of unconditional love. So when I met my 5th child, he was 18 years old. He had been in foster care, Dr. Sarah, since he was 5, been in 11 homes, 6 schools.
Wow.
Little would I know that I met this young boy and that 3 months after meeting him, my family and I asked him to live with us. And little would I know that my husband and I would be the very first couple in the state of Maryland to petition the courts to have a child from foster care live with us without a stipend. The judge asked me, Mr. Scheer, why would you do this? I said to the judge, as I say to each and every one of you, every child deserves a foundation. Every child deserves to know there's someone there rooting them on. Every child deserves to feel what it feels like to be loved unconditionally. A year after my son arrived in our home, he came to my husband and I and asked us to adopt him. I said, Alex, you're 19 years old. You're never going anywhere. And he was like, no, I want the same last name as my brothers and my sister and you and Dada.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
We adopted him a year after that. And my kids now are 25, 21, 19, 18, and 17.
Small acts of dignity can ripple outward into lasting hope. So if this conversation feels important to you, like, subscribe, and share. I want to hear from you. Your thoughts and questions matter. So stick around, and I'll share how you can get in on the conversation.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And it makes me think, what can we do in a society and in communities to help these children have options like we who have parents have had when these children don't ever choose homelessness and incarceration when they age out?
Yeah. You know, I think the thing that we all need to do is to realize that, you know, this is a problem that we all can solve. We actually can. We can actually change these numbers. And how do you do that? Every child is just one step away from an adult who cares about them. Mm-hmm. And that we have to realize. One, and again, I'm not telling anybody what they need to believe, but the days of faith-based not being involved within our charities of children, we've got to figure something out. Because mm-hmm. if every single mosque, temple, church were to just adopt one child, and I'm not saying adopt, change their last name or anything. I'm just saying be there, help them, mentor them. Literally, we could do away with most child welfare. See, those are the things as people, we have to know that our forefathers, they built communities for one reason, and it wasn't for our bushes to match. It was for us to take care of each other. And that is the thing that we have forgotten within our society. It's okay to knock on someone's door and say, by the way, I've noticed your lights haven't been on for 2 weeks. Is everything okay? But instead, we call the police, we call CPS, instead of being the neighborly, loving people we are and that I know we can be. Instead, we turn our lights off and shut the door and pretend like it's not there. But by the way, when the light comes on and the door opens up, we're still there.
And for listeners who may not be familiar with foster care practices, I have to tell you, with all honesty, even as a pediatrician, I never really considered the age out process, but what is the foster care system from the perspective of a child that's in it? I really want to help listeners understand what that feels like.
Well, I mean, first of all, you got to understand that when children are brought into the foster care system, close to 90% of them, and by the way, it's one child every 2 minutes, 700 a day care in the United States.
That's unbelievable. I mean, I believe it, but it sounds unbelievable, right?
Yeah. One child every 2 minutes, an average of 700 a day. They come in the system, the majority of them, Dr. Sarah, in the back of a police cruiser. Okay. Hmm. So no matter how bad it was at home, okay, these kids still want to be with their parents. By the way, I was a young boy who I'm still scarred by the cigarettes my father put out on me and my brothers and sisters. Yeah. Because what? I still wanted to be with them. I still wanted them, you know? And that's typical for children in our foster care system. Because guess what? When we come into the system, it's just as bad. So what do we do? First of all, as a society, we have to start preparing children who are in foster care that one day they will age out. Simple as that. It's going to happen. So what do? We as a society set them up for success. First of all, that success has to be a financial success. If you're able to give a check to a total stranger to watch our children, why can't you take part of that money and put it in an interest-bearing savings account? So when those kids do age out, they have some type of net. And by the way, I'm a father of 5 kids. I would never stroke my 18-year-olds a big, huge check. But what I would do, and what we have done, is give them financial literacy classes. What we do and what we need to, that needs to be done, is open up our education pathways for these kids. And by the way, I do not mean just pay their 4-year tuition. I mean complete wraparound services, Dr. Sarah. We need mental help. We need housing. We need food insecurities. We need all of the things that can make a successful society with a little bit of investment.
And what I hear you saying is this is how we help children in the foster care system actually thrive and not just survive.
Yeah, and that's what we are. You know, when we're in the system, we are in survival mode. And by the way, it doesn't leave us. It doesn't leave us.
No.
The way I act and the way I respond to things is because of what I went through as a child. And I do say to people all the time, I do not forget my parents. And say, people say all the time, oh, my parents were a product of their environment. No, my parents were a product of choices. We as society stop with the product of environment. We are a product of choices. Choices are not always easy, but we are truly a product of choices. And when you look at kids in foster care, 64% of kids in foster care enter because of one word. And that word is called neglect. And the definition of neglect throughout our country is poverty. It's poverty. And so when a child enters foster care because of that word, we as society, we've already failed. We've already failed, okay? Because the system is a lot worse than mom not being able to pay the electric. Or mom has to leave the 5-year-old with the 12-year-old because she can't afford daycare because we don't pay a living wage, but she's going to work. And she leaves the 5-year-old with the 12-year-old. And instead of the neighbor coming and saying, let me watch your kids, you call CPS. You know, that's got to stop.
And what I hear you talking about is very openly, and I appreciate it, is about trauma, is about resilience and survival. I want to ask you, as someone who now works so closely with children, how do you understand your younger self differently through the lens of an adult and healing?
You know, I have to tell you, as an adult,
that's a tough question. We're getting deep, Rob. I appreciate this.
You know, my husband and I are getting ready to celebrate 21 years. And
congratulations.
Thank you. My husband, well, he grew up in the Midwest. His parents have been married 50 some years. You know, he's totally, you know, totally is like different when it comes to me. And I look at the way he reacts with our kids compared to the way I react with our kids. And that, again, is how what happened to me as a child. And for me, you know, nobody talked to me about aging out. I didn't even think about it. And kids who I meet today who are aging out, they also don't understand it, you know? And that's where we have to change that.
Preparation is what I hear. And you know, getting back to talking about the foster care system and the state of it, placement instability is a major issue for children. You mentioned your fifth child and how many homes that he was, all the different schools. What are the emotional and developmental consequences when kids are moved repeatedly? And what could realistically reduce that disruption?
Well, I mean, first of all, you as a pediatrician know that, you know, that stability is so important for kids. I always say this all the time. Medical health is just not about your organs. Medical health is about your entire well-being.
Yes.
And if a child is continuously moved and not have stability, and not just stability in housing, stability in people, you know, I mean, you look at the fact that the average foster parent is only, the average lifespan is 18 months. And the reason for that is there's no support. Okay.
True. Yes.
Not prepared. We don't prepare foster parents. They have this mindset that these kids are bad. First of all, there's no such thing as a bad kid. No. It's only a child that needs to be redirected. That's what people need to understand. I mean, no one has an evil
It's a great reframe.
Is truly the child needs to be redirected. So, but we have in our mindset that these are bad kids and they're not. So I truly believe as society that if we supported people and kept people who are fostering more, and also, okay, not only support people who are fostering more, but support the foster care community more, and let's normalize. First of all, let's stop calling them foster kids. I mean, it's not called the homeless man. We call him the man who's experiencing homelessness. Well, guess what, doctor?
Yes.
These are children. These are children who are experiencing foster care. Foster care doesn't define them. It is only a portion of their life at this moment. And if we continue to beat it into them, it then does become defining. It does become defining. And that's what I'm trying to get away from, is stop labeling these kids. These are kids who are experiencing foster care. At the end of the day, they're kids.
And what I hear you saying is that the foster parents and kinship caregivers are overwhelmed and really under-supported. So what kind of resources or training or policy change would make a big difference for them and ultimately as a ripple effect for the children?
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that we as an organization have been working on for years, and we've actually have been successful in having bills passed in states.
Wonderful.
Where now social workers actually are given funds to be able to purchase items such as comfort cases or our Comfort XL program, which is our 32-inch duffel bag. The thing that we need to do is we need to do as everyday citizens to continue to look in our foster care system, continuing. And by the way, if you're in a house of worship, please do me a favor and find out why somebody hasn't come and talked to your congregation about foster care. Because I can tell you this, as someone who has asked my Methodist minister many times, it's always the same answer. I live on the side of the tracks that people think we do not care. And I want everybody to understand, no matter what your financial level is, no matter what, we all understand that children are the most valuable things within our society. Seriously, they're more valuable than any oil, gas, money, diamonds. Children are so valuable. And we need to make sure we're protecting them and we're nurturing them. And we're helping them to grow the way we know they can grow. Because if you pick the low-hanging fruit on a tree, the tree grows taller.
What a beautiful expression. I'm going to take that with me in this conversation for sure. So from your experience, what do most Americans misunderstand?
The misunderstanding is that kids in foster care are bad, that kids in foster care are troubled, that kids in foster care have too many emotional issues. By the way, we all have too many emotional issues. Will I say that it's been easy being a parent of five kids in foster care? No, I'm never going to lie to you. It has been a road. It's been a roller coaster. But let me tell you something. It's been so rich. It has been so rewarding. And I've had kids who arrived at my doorstep with fetal alcohol syndrome. I've had kids who arrived at doorsteps whose parents were 12 years old, who've come in the system with bleeding of the brain. I've had kids who I was told was never going to speak. And by the way, he's now on a full scholarship at college. Don't ever think that children are not resilient, because they are. They truly are. And there's no such word as never. Don't ever say never, because you never know.
This is so true. I have to share with you, as a pediatrician, I took care of many children who are in foster homes. I have also experienced it firsthand. I have a nephew and a niece-in-law who are foster parents. And have now adopted two children, and watching that whole experience, you know, their preparation and application and the whole process. And I really see what you're talking about. And I want to start wrapping up and say, what else you'd like people to know and take away from this conversation? It's been such a rich conversation. And most importantly, how can we support comfort cases?
You know, the thing is that I say this all the time. I truly don't care what anyone does, just as long as they do. As long as they do. See, the world goes around, and people were taught that it goes around on an axle, but I've learned something in the last 13 years. The world actually doesn't go around on an axle. The world goes around because the doers that push it every day, the doers that are out there and making that needle move. And so what I say is that, you know what? We all have the same thing in common. Whether we're male or female, white or black, straight or gay, rich or poor, we all have the same thing in common. And that is, we have time. And some of us feel we have very little. Some of us feel we have too much. But I will tell you, take that time and invest it in your community. Volunteer. Volunteer. And so at Comfort Cases, we have volunteer opportunities all over the country to impact kids in foster care. We have the opportunity for you to go to comfortcases.org. And by the way, for just $10 a month, I'm able to take this trash bag out of a child's hand and I'm able to give them the 32-inch duffel bag.
Wow.
Designed by Briggs & Riley. Retails for $129. Mm-hmm. I give them for $10 a piece, and I've given over 190,000 of these. Those are things that you can do. And by the way, Dr. Sarah, I can tell you this right now. A lot of your viewers, they spend more than that in that overpriced coffee shop.
That's right.
Coffee shop's name because they don't give us donations. But, you know, we all can do something. You know, we can all figure out how we can go mentor a kid in foster care. And by the way, for those of you who are sitting back thinking you don't have kids in foster care, yes, you do. There's not a county out there, and this is not a city thing. It's not an inner city thing. It's not a color. By the way, people always shock me when they say, oh, the foster care system must have a lot of kids of color because you adopted four of them. Well, first of all, I will let you know that the majority of kids in foster care are actually white. It just so happens I live in the D.C. area, and so that is a dominant area for kids of color in the system. But why I say that is that there's kids all over this country that are in foster care that are just looking for somebody to do the basketball, get your nails done, read a book, help with filling out an SAT form. Anybody can do anything and make an impact.
Rob, you're not only giving these comfort cases, you're giving dignity and hope. And pediatric professionals, educators, communicators, and community members that are listening, what are concrete ways they can support children in foster care, even if they never become a foster parent themselves?
You know, again, as I've said this quite often, not everybody is made to adopt. Not everybody's made to foster. Not everybody is made to do that. But every one of us is made to serve. And again, as leaders, and by the way, understand something. Each and every one of us are leaders. Every one of us are leaders. And as leaders, we do not have the opportunity to stand on the sideline and watch a game to be played. We get in the game and we play it. And that's what leaders have to do, is we have to get into it, mix it up, and really come out making a difference.
Rob, thank you so much. You reminded us that children don't need perfection. They need dignity, consistency, and adults who refuse to look away.
Yes. Yes. Dr. Sarah, thank you so much. Thank you.
At every stage of development, children ask the same question, do I matter? Today's conversation reminds us that how we answer that question can shape a lifetime. So please email or upload a voice memo to Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. And you can do that to growingupwithdr.sarah@gmail.com. I'll answer questions for you on the show. Thank you for showing up for this episode of Growing Up with Dr. Sarah. Thank you, Rob, again. And let's grow up together.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.